very much, members, and good morning to all of you. We're starting with our meeting today. The agenda is not a big agenda for today. And the greetings to our invitees for today. I see the deputy chairperson of the IEC. I see Commissioner Mosotho Miyabza. I see the CEO, Mr. Mamabolo. I also see the Deputy Minister of Home Affairs in our midst. Good morning to every one of you and the members. The agenda is opening, number one. Number two is apologies. Number three is a briefing on the electoral amendment. And four is discussion, five is closure. We don't intend to take more than 2 hours into this meeting. And thank you very much for attending the meeting. The intention of what we're doing today, as you all know, is that we have publicized the bill. I did receive comments from members to the effect that the bill was only publicized in one paper. Upon my inquiry, I found out that it was in one paper that spoke that was relating to English as a language, but it was publicized in all other 11 languages and in a prescribed and legally acceptable way. So what we are going to do today, and what I will request indulgence of the members to, will be to attend to what the public has raised. And Adams will be giving a presentation generally of what the public has raised with regard to the issue of the Electoral Amendment Bill. We do have the IEC and the Home Affairs in the form of a deputy minister. What would be important today is just to take notes, and so that next week when we engage with the IEC already knows what is the view of the committee and what is the view of the public about what has been raised. Now, one of the decisions you need to take as part of a legislative process is to conduct what we call public hearings. I have consulted broadly about this issue of the public hearings, and I've looked at the submissions. And in my view, but that will be subject to the members discussing, my view is that we may not need the traditional public hearing, but we may have to look into this submission, do a consolidation of what the public has raised, because this process that we're dealing with, it does form part of what we call the broader public participation process. In what I found out, and as a complaint and received comments and calls, was around section 14, which talks about electoral vote, electronic voting, but Adams will go to town about that. But I have said that it's a matter we can discuss here and agree about it, because that what appeared to be a contentious matter around the comments and the calls that I got. But I've said we can deal with it as members. We may not need to do the real public hearings because of the nature of the bill and the nature of how we've been dealing with such bills in the past. But it is up to you, members. You may make contribution, but from the chair, that would be my submission. As we engage, let's also talk to that specific matter. I think that is the only one matter that is contagious, but we'll allow Adams to take us through. But before we do that, on apologies, I've just received an apology from the chairperson of the IEC, who's not here for, he's in attendance of other meetings. I have truly accepted this apology on the behalf of the committee. with those few words and those apologies presented, I want to give to you others, because I see you've also beamed your face in front of me. You really want to proceed. Can you take the committee?
Chairperson?
Honorable Tito.
Thanks, Chairperson. Can you also note the apology of Honorable Mqini Chwaku? He won't attend today with us. Thank you.
Okay, we also note that apology. But we had requested in the past that the reason why we have AD and that office is to facilitate the issues of the committee in an organized and a dignified way and an orderly way so that we get them in one pot and report as such. But we do note the apologies of Mqina.
Chairperson, may I also be recognized?
What's this?
May I also be recognized, please? On apologies.
Yes, you are certainly.
Thank you. Good morning. We received an apology for Honorable Maklua. He's attending. We do apologize. Yeah, in future, he will send it as per the agreement. Thank you.
Thank you very much. With those apologies accepted, members, can we take the briefing from Adams? Over to you, Adams. Can you shoot, Adams?
Unmute. He must unmute.
Adams?
I just wanted to confirm that you can see the document, sir.
That is correct.
Yeah. Okay.
I can also see you and the document.
I can hide myself if you want.
No, don't.
Okay, thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, honourable members and our guests. The submissions we received in total were quite a few. In total, there were 12,330 odd submissions. Only 28 of those were directly to the committee. The rest were through an organisation called Dear South Africa, which does online campaigns, and they've dealt with legislation submissions in the past. So they were very kind to summarize the content of the submissions, a lot of which were received last week, Friday, after the committee gave an extension. So there were quite a few. So the first real submission here is that there were quite a few submissions requesting an extension of the submission period. So a minimum of 2 weeks is usually given. We gave 3 weeks, but due to this request, the chairperson and the committee gave an additional week. And so it ended up being just over 3 weeks, or 26 days, actually almost a month for submissions to come through. So a lot more submissions came given the extension. So the way the summary works here is we have in the first column the clause in the bill. Secondly, the section and the act that it relates to in the piece of legislation. Then in bold we have the list of people submitting. Now, these are the names and institutions that submitted, and then a summary of their submission. And then lastly, there are questions and the space for response. For the IEC or the entity responding. So, as I said, the first real indication were that there was a lot of requests for extension. This in turn was given, allowing for over 11,000 further submissions to come through. Then, secondly, here we can see that plus minus. 11,141. So when I say Dear South Africa times less than 11,141, I indicate that because the Dear South Africa provided us a summary, which I'll briefly go through after this, that indicate that many people felt this, but the exact number of people that expressed this view is not the full amount of those people, but certainly a significant part of that. So then we can move on to the next main submission. The Institute for Race Relations made the most substantive submission, and a lot of their summary of the arguments, or the main points that they raise, are essentially a summary of all the views that have been added, or the main views that have been added on this bill. So the first of which was, apart from the extension of time, was that there needed to be a socioeconomic impact assessment before the bill was adopted. This is in terms of the Department of Planning, Monitoring, and Evaluation's guidelines in 2015, which ensure that the full cost of regulations and the impact on the economy are considered. They indicate, however, that no socioeconomic impact was done, or SAIS was done, and no such report was attended to the bill. So the question then to the IEC is, why was no socioeconomic impact done for the bill? And then there are two comments on the entire bill, so not relating to any specific regulation. There was just a person who just said they object to the bill in total, and that any changes to the electoral law is very suspicious, but without giving any specification as to why. And then Mr. Archibald was of the view that that changing, allowing the IEC to change the voting method would be open to manipulation, and that it could be used by the incumbent to retain power, given the concerns around corruption, and that this could result in constitutional concerns. Then there were a significant amount of submissions on four clauses. So that concern was raised. These concerns are raised by several submittees. So that's clause 6, clause 9, 13, 14, and 21. So the Institute on clause 16, which relates to section 23.3 of the Electoral Act, where both Institute of Race Relations and Dear South Africa, of approximately less than 840 submissions, who were not fully in favor of the bill, but partially in favor of the bill, as well as around 11,000 people who are against the bill from Dear South Africa, indicate that the subsection currently provides that any regulation which affects a state expenditure will be made with concurrence of the Minister of Finance. And once the bill is enacted, the need for this concurrence will fall away, because the IEC propose removing this clause. This is disturbing at a time when South Africa's public debt is mounting and there are increasing debt payments. And the provision by the IEC just suggests that the IEC is proposing to introduce potentially an electronic voting method. This in turn could escalate costs, and if there's no oversight by Treasury, as is currently contained in section 23, this could lead to like a ballooning of costs without proper oversight. So then you'll see as we go into further arguments that there are quite a few objections against the potential for the introduction of electronic voting without supervision or without policy consultation. Then the question then to the IEC is, was it the intention of the IEC to remove, what was the intention of the IEC in removing clause 23.3? And how will Treasury now monitor the spending of the IEC on its regulations? Then we go into clause 9. We have three baskets of submissions here. The Fishhook Ratepayers Association indicate that section 24A of the bill, which relates to clause 9 of section 24A of the Electoral Act, which is amended by clause 9, should require a unique geocode to replace the address, so that the IEC can properly control the voter to be able to vote in a specific ward, local, metropolitan, or district municipality. So they're suggesting that those who don't have addresses should have a specific geolocation. So like that's a way of accurately indicating, usually with some kind of GPS device, exactly where a person lives. Then there were submissions from Dear South Africa, less than 11,000, but up to. There's a good reason why voting must be done in a specific point. Each area knows how many voters to expect that reside in that area. Proper compiled lists to ensure reliable control is required. Otherwise, voter rigging, corruption, bribery, and counting fraud could take place. People will manage to vote multiple times, and this could thwart a reliable voting system. So that's views from people who are against the bill emanating via Dear South Africa. Then Dear South Africa, for those who were in favor of the bill, they agree that the notion to allow flexibility to vote at different regions from where they initially registered is okay, as long as there are suitable controls, as the IEC have indicated. So there was around 318, up to 318 submissions on that. Then the question is, the IEC, is there a cost-effective means by which a geocode could be used rather than an address for the introduction proposed in Clause 9? Then in Clause 13, which deals with Section 33 of the Electoral Act, there was a single submission via Dear South Africa that the above clause, anyone which deals with persons voting abroad, having to notify the commission within 15 days of the proclamation of an act, of their intention to vote abroad. They indicate that this is hardly enough time, particularly in circumstances where a person only knows much later that he will be outside the Republic, and that the wording is a little unclear because the clause mentioned is made that he or she notifies the chief electoral officer in the prescribed manner by no later than the relevant date stated in the electoral timetable. The two statements appear to contradict one another, that being the prescribed method and the time period. And the question there is to could more than 15 days be allowed for voters abroad to register after the proclamation of an election? And then we move on to clause 14 and 21. This is the main clause that as the chairperson indicated, there were objections against. So I've tried to bring the types of objections together, and there are three main types of objections to this particular clause. These clauses 14 and 21 deal with the same kind of amendment, but in one in the Electoral Act and one in the Municipal Electoral Act, which deal with the prescribed, allowing the IEC to prescribe a different voting method. So there's again a list here of all the submissions, Fisher Ratepayers Association, iPower attorneys, et cetera. So quite a few, and then up to 11,000 submissions from Dear South Africa who were against the bill, up to 846 who were not fully in favor of the bill, and up to 308 that were in favor of the bill, but nonetheless had this objection, as well as the Helen Suzman Foundation. Clause 14 of the bill seeks to amend Section 38 of the Electoral Act through the addition of a new subsection. The new subsection will confer upon the IEC the power to prescribe a different voting method to that prescribed in the Electoral Act. Clause 21 of the bill seeks to introduce an identical amendment into Section 47 of the Municipal Electoral Act. The effect of clauses 14 and 21 will be that, notwithstanding the detailed provisions governing the voting method in the relevant legislation, The IEC will be empowered to prescribe a different voting method for national and provincial elections and for local government elections. The sections of these acts prescribe the detailed method by which voters may vote in detail. Voters must vote by entering a voting compartment at their voting station, marking a ballot paper in a way that indicates their preference, and placing the marked ballot in a ballot box. The Helen Suzman Foundation and others listed above submit that this is an impermissible delegation of Parliament's constitutional legislative function to prescribe the details of our electoral system. That's prescribed in section 44(1) of the Constitution. So basically indicating this is a policy decision that the IEC could potentially be relegating or delegating to regulation, allowing the IEC to make that discretion rather than through public consultation or through policy decided by Parliament. They indicate also that the IEC may be empowered to unilaterally make prescriptions on matters such as important matters that relate to our democracy without any guidance from Parliament. There is a genuine public concern that a change to the prescribed voting method may open the door to electoral fraud, in particular electronic voting, which has been shown to be more vulnerable to electoral fraud in many cases than even the paper method, which itself has its problems. But we'll go more into that concern. So this is a concern raised around the introduction of policy without Parliament's oversight. And so the question then to the IEC is, could the clause be crafted to more specifically to refer to what alternative voting methods are being considered rather than an open statement that includes potential policy shifts? And then also dealing with clause 14 and 21, these are from around 318 persons who are in favor of the bill, who indicate that they are in favor of electronic voting, but their concern is nonetheless that where the public are not able to vote via an online submission, voting stations should still be erected, such as in rural areas and areas where access to internet and devices might not be as reliable. Secondly, that electronic voting with a mobile number that is registered to a person on the voter's roll could be allowed, as long as they recut, so indicating where they live and have a reliable address. Thirdly, that if such a system is used, quantum voting, including like the blockchain system, which cannot be rigged or tampered with, must be integral to that system to make sure that it's secure. And fourthly, that an ID book for voting must be presented, but then the voting stations must also be electronic, so that no person can vote twice. So you can have electronic voting systems incorporated in voting booths. So that's an option, one of the submissions. Then the question is, if the IEC intends to introduce e-voting, what security measures? We then go on to further objections to the clauses 14 and 21. These ones relate specifically to the objections against electronic voting, specifically as mentioned before. So the first set of objections there is that no further explanation is provided in memorandum 2.1.14 at the back of the bill, in the objects of the bill, as to why a differing voting method may be needed. So they just indicate the potential, but they don't describe it in more detail, which is usually what happens in the memorandum on the objects of the bill at the back of the bill. Nor is an explanation given as to why the Commission should have the power in introducing a voting method to override any contrary provisions in both the Electoral Act or in any other act of law. So it's quite a broad statement that they include in the draft clause. Then the IEC also have indicated on several occasions that electronic voting is being considered as a means to reduce cost and improve efficiency. However, traditional voting systems are not entirely immune to irregularities. although traditional voting methods are not entirely immune to irregularities, international experience confirms the safeguards they provide are far stronger than those available under electronic systems. In particular, traditional voting systems are far more transparent because they provide a paper trail that can be observed at every stage. The Institute for Race Relations and others attached an entire separate paper on why electronic voting is less secure and has in fact been abolished by early adopters like the Netherlands. So they adopted it in 2007 and discarded it less than 10 years later because of all kinds of challenges they experienced. As it relates specifically to Clause 21, all concerns outlined about the costs and vulnerabilities of electronic voting systems apply with equal, if not greater, measure in the municipal context. The practical difficulties of securing adequate internet access, technical support, network access, and reliable electricity supplies are likely to still be more severe in many remote rural areas, as I briefly mentioned earlier. This will make the costs and vulnerabilities of electronic voting at the local level even greater. Advocate Hoffman pointed out in a ruling on Section 191 of the Constitution requires that the IEC ensure that elections at all three tiers of government are free and fair. And the IEC cannot fulfill this obligation under the electronic voting system when the opportunities for rigging of elections conducted in this manner are legion and widely known to be so. Then a further submission from Dear South Africa in this regard, particularly from those 11,000 who were against the bill, is that the electronic voting methods should be put in place to address corrupt behavior. So they object to electronic voting, but even with the paper voting, that there needs to be further methods to prevent corruption. And while in theory electronic voting could be auditable and computer systems are vulnerable to hacking and therefore the rigging of results. In addition, it would require that every political party should be permitted to audit the results independently, which would be very expensive, but would be the only fair way to ensure that the elections were free and fair. So again, another additional cost concern around the introduction of electronic voting that could potentially arise out of this clause. Clause 15 then, which relates to Section 50 of the Electoral Act. And under the current wording, Section 50, the counting officer, after determining the results at a voting station, must complete a form reflecting, amongst other things, the number of ballot papers, the result at the voting station, the number of counted ballots that were accepted or disputed, and the number of ballots that were rejected or cancelled or unused. Ballots being wrongly discarded, and fraudulent ones being inserted instead. Just to indicate, sorry, I had an indication that my internet connection is unstable. So if I'm unclear, please indicate so. After determining the results at a voting station, the counting officer.
What you must do, just remove your face to force multiply your internet connectivity.
Yes. Thank you. So Section 50 under the current bill would be reworded so that it reads, after determining the results at a voting station, the counting officer must complete a prescribed form reflecting the results of the count in respect of each ballot conducted at the voting station. All reference to ballot papers is now all reference to ballot papers contained in Section 50 will be omitted, which will make it difficult, if not impossible, to achieve a proper ballot reconciliation. Confusingly, moreover, the wording refers to each ballot conducted at the voting station rather than to each ballot cast at the station. The proposed subsection is thus difficult to understand, introducing further uncertainty. Yet vagueness of this kind is contrary to the doctrine against vagueness in laws, as stressed by the constitutional courts in the Affordable Medicine Trust case. So then the question, I think there was just an errata. There was, a mistake in the submission from the Institute for Race Relations, which we'll clarify with them, because they refer to Section 51.1 instead of 51, but the content relates to Section 51. So that's just a question to them. But then to the IEC is, why is the reference to ballot papers removed and the word ballot conducted used rather than cast as before? Then moving to Memorandum 4, this is from the Institute for Race Relations. So it doesn't relate to a section of the Act or section of an Act. But the Object 4 of the Memorandum states that most of the amendments proposed by this bill relate to normal operations related to elections. For this reason, the financial implications have already been taken into account when compiling the budget for these elections. The concern from the race relations is that this statement brushes over the high cost of acquiring the hardware and software needed for an electronic voting system, as earlier outlined. It also brushes over the high recurring costs that will be needed in overcoming problems, in solving fresh defects in the technology, changes and additional steps that may be taken to ward off these threats. In addition, the finance minister is to be barred from any say over this additional expenditure, whereas under the current rules, his concurrence would be required. So the question to the IEC is, has the IEC considered the cost implications of potential pewter electronic votes in its internal costing of the bill? These are objections to no specific clause in the bill, but to both the Local Government Municipal Act and the Constitution. The 70s group and around 318 Dear South Africa submissions in favor of the bill indicated that they should allow for direct election of mayors in towns and cities, including independent candidates in the Local Government Municipal Electoral Act, as per the court ruling pertaining to national provincial legislatures. If this is not brought into effect by this or the next election, will it not make the bill unconstitutional? So they're indicating basically that they want the policy matter that the committee is already considering with a potential future amendment to be in this bill already. And then there's Mr. Escovenda, is of the view that we must get rid of political parties completely and move in the direction of direct representation by the people for areas of around 50,000 people. In this way, the numbers of people in parliament will be reduced, bringing down costs and allowing greater expenditure in poorer areas. And we also need to ask whether political parties, since they have no allegiance, since they have allegiance to the party and not to the people, if they can walk out of meetings and they would listen to various individual, whereas if they were individual representations, they would listen to individual views and support the view that is supported by the majority. So this is a call for like a complete overhaul of the political party system. And then lastly, there's Mr. M.G. Buthelezi, who indicates that the Electoral Act and the Electoral Commission Act and the Local Government Act all need to be scrapped, and that should be moved towards instead of having elections, it would be better if the country were ruled by kings and chiefs as it was in the past, and that the upcoming elections in South Africa should not be held, but the land should be returned to its rightful owners, the Zulus, Khoisas, Sutus, Tswanas, Ndebeles, Pondos, Shangaans, Vendas, and other Africans. So that's his submission. And then before I hand over to questions, I'm just going to quickly, briefly refer to the document by Dear South Africa, which again provides an overview of the larger group of submissions. Let me find it here. Okay.
priorities that relate to the COVID response.
Can we confirm that you can see this with the pie chart on?
Yeah.
Thank you very much. So this is the summary provided for... I'm hearing a noise. Is anybody trying to speak? Am I still audible?
We can hear you, Eddie.
Okay.
Adam. We can hear you, Adam, sorry.
Thank you for confirming that, ma'am. So again, this document, which was forwarded to members, is a summary of the 12,300 odd submissions that came via the South Africa platform. So this provides a summary of their submissions. So just to indicate that around 318 were in favor of the bill, which amounts to about 2.5% of the submissions. 11,140 were against the bill, and 846 were not fully in favor of the bill. And then the main concerns, as highlighted in my summary, were relating to the constitutionality of the bill, i.e. that that Parliament could potentially not oversee the policy change. Secondly, the cost to the state as it relates to electronic voting and also oversight by Treasury. The introduction of a different voting method, which could be e-voting, and rules determining the results at voting stations. So that reference to the removing of a reference to ballot papers and casting of votes. And so then there's a pie chart there of... how those various submissions make up make up the entire party. And then there are a list of other submissions, which I've also tried to capture. There's some other, which I've also tried to capture in the summary. So that's just an indication of the summary. And then they in turn highlight all of these issues raised by their submissions, which I included in my summary. Along with assistance from my research, I must say he assisted in the summary of the submissions too. So that's the end for me, Chairperson. If you'd like to take over. Chairperson, are you still there? Eddie, is the chairperson with us?
No, it appears it's got cut.
I've just admitted him again. He should be with us again.
I think the...
Chairperson, are you with us?
Let me give him a call.
No, I'm inside.
Oh, okay.
Chairperson, I was just indicating that I've finished my summary, and I hand over back to you.
Okay, thank you very much. Members, there you go. I'll take the hands in the following order. Rose, number one. Number two, Honorable Blizzard. Number three, Honorable Hendricks. Four, Honorable Dito. Five, Honorable Molekwa. Six, Honorable Kanyile. Seven, Honorable Likota. Eight, Honorable Muela. Then number nine, Honorable Chabana.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the preparation and presentation, Adam. So for starters, I think a number of the items will still be covered by the IEC and a number of questions that will be responded to. You know, if I look at clause six, that's the first clause that I'm looking at here. And the question of the IEC removing clause 23, I'm assuming here that the Treasury doesn't need to give special permission normally for a entity to spend its own budget. So they would only need to go to Treasury to request further funding or additional funding to procure things like special voting devices. So I'd just like some clarity on that. Then in terms of clause nine, I note the comment on geocoding. I think it's important to note that we have a national addressing project that is ongoing, and it's been planned and discussed for many years already, whereby there's an addressing standard, et cetera, et cetera. And I'm aware that the IEC has committed to undertake a geocoding project. My concern with that input is if you had to use the geocode to identify the unit, it would be very difficult for somebody to understand the geocode of their house. So that's my concern with that proposal in terms of a geocode. I think it's satisfactory what the IEC has in mind now to geocode the addresses. The requirement is that you need to go to your voting station and point on a map to where you are. And they would still need to clarify how exactly the net becomes an address. So that's my input on that one. Then if we look at clause 13, so what it said before is that we need 15 days after the proclamation. So my only concern with the change is really that there's no minimum notice period now. So I believe that although the commencement of this period whereby you need to go and register could be added to the election schedule, there should still be a minimum notice period. So perhaps the 15 days that was there before, and that you just then have more flexibility on when that period begins. And certainly, I think, from comments that I've received as well, clause 14 and 21, a different voting method. I think what we come back to here, and it's been discussed already as Parliament is looking at its public participation model. And there are two key elements of that before we even get to the stage where we're at now. And that is the stage where the public is informed. So where they're informed of the full plans and implications of a specific bill. And then where they're consulted. So where there's meetings and consultation that happens before we even get to this stage. And certainly with a different voting method, it's not something that can be rushed. It's something that requires a lot of informing of the public and a lot of consultation, because it's clear, and you just have to look at the US election now. Whoever loses will immediately question this voting method if it hasn't been clearly workshopped and explained beforehand, and it doesn't have a consensus so that the public is satisfied. So we look at things like, we talk about e-voting in this stage, but it could be any other method which we don't know about, which is very concerning. So we could decide in South Africa we're going to have mail-in votes. And if that discretion is just left to the IEC, it's going to result in a tremendous public dissatisfaction, apart from the very relevant input of the Helen Suzman Foundation about the unconstitutionality of trying to take this role and moving it, giving the full discretion to the IEC. So I agree 100% with that that input in this regard. So I believe that the different voting method, we were told in a previous meeting that it's not going to happen in this election. The idea was the piloting of an e-voting system. But I think we also need to bear in mind, we're not just talking about e-voting. This could be any system that any official in the IEC could determine. And so my proposal in this regard is that clauses 14 and 21 are removed from this bill, and that there is a comprehensive public participation process, which starts with proposals and informing the public, goes through to consultations, and then resulting in something that we can then bring to Parliament. But at the end of the day, the Parliament is the representatives of the people, and Parliament needs to exercise our mandate in terms of approving a voting regime. My proposal is that clause 14 and 21 should be removed from the bill, and then also the references to casting a vote and the ballot paper should be returned, so that there's no confusion in this regard. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. I've not heard you properly about this process of consultation, Ross.
Thank you, Chair. So yes, there's a process in Parliament at the moment to look at the public participation process. And it talks about a four-stage process, which starts with informing. So providing an opportunity for the public to access information. And this requires the dissemination of information and the education of the public, so that they understand the full implications of what you're talking about and that they know exactly what you're talking about. So, in this case, you wouldn't have a situation where we say any voting method, the public doesn't understand what that is, what is it going to look like, and they're unable to really understand all the details of it. So that is a first step. Second step, a consultation. So this is providing an opportunity for submissions. In other words, pre-hearings, and a very important aspect of the socioeconomic impact assessment of something like that, which has a very, many of the changes in this document are technical, there is a significant socioeconomic impact to an alternative voting method. So these are the kind of things that go in the consultation stage. And then you have the involvement stage, and that is hearings, sittings, and the public participation, which is the process we have now. And then finally, feedback is the fourth step. So that's follow-up visits, monitoring, evaluation, and the communication once the legislation is passed. So these are some of the recommendations that have been made in terms of the public participation model. So that is why my recommendation is that seeing as we don't need to implement an alternative voting method in the 2021 election, that we should consider these additional steps and really start with a comprehensive process where we engage with the public on what are the different possibilities, so that we're not rushed at the end and we have to push something on the public that they don't understand.
Okay, thank you. Honourable Van der Merwe.
Thank you very much, Chairperson, and thank you very much to Adam for this presentation. I think I've been covered largely by Honourable Ruiz on the questions about Treasury and the notice period. But also just to say on the consultation process, at the start you said, Chairperson, that maybe we will not engage in public hearings on this bill. But I do think that, there's merit in saying that we should be asking all of these stakeholders that presented these submissions to us to ask them to come and engage with us. I think the consultation process, as highlighted by Honourable Ruiz and yourself, is very important. And so I would agree that my view would be, even if it's a public hearing for one day on a virtual platform, even would be important for us to engage with people who have taken time to give their views and inputs. My view is also on the issue of clause 14 and 21. I think it's very contentious. I think if you look at the submissions, the public, in particular organizations such as the Institute for Race Relations, are very concerned about the implications of electronic voting or possible other means of voting. And therefore, I think also those clauses should be removed. I think I agree that the argument can be made that manual voting systems are far more transparent because there is a paper trail in the process, and that electronic systems is only transparent because when there's a small amount of technology organizations involved, who of course is controlled by the state. So I think we know that the IEC has an obligation to ensure elections are free and fair, and maybe they cannot necessarily fulfill that obligation under an electronic voting system when there are far more opportunities for rigging. So I also agree that we should consider removing those clauses for now, leaving them out for now. I don't think in any case we've discussed this matter before, where we've raised the issue of the finances, that it, you know, it's too costly to procure currently the hard software that would be needed for this process to unfold. So those are my submissions for now. But Chairperson, I think we should have an opportunity through public hearings to engage with these submissions. But I would also like to hear from the IEC with regards to the concerns that have been raised in Clause 14 and 21. If they can just give us clarity on how did they plan to allay the fears around those clauses if they do not agree for the clauses to be removed. But that's it for now. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honourable Hendricks.
Thank you very much, Honourable Chair. Honourable Chair, the alternative voting method is obviously going to hold us up a bit. So I support the fact that maybe, you know, that is something, Honourable Chair, you must give leadership on. We should rather, with regard to alternative voting system, start a completely separate process, nothing to do with amendments. So it purely serves as an educational means, purely serves to address the issues around socio-economic assessment. But I think we must thank the public, Honourable Chair, for their submissions. It shows that there is a lot of interest in this matter, and it was the right thing to do to start this process. However, if we examine those who have responded, there's a bit of capacity building that is needed, so we get more responses from townships, from villages, from remote areas, on what is very important issues for the nation. Thank you very much, Honourable Chair.
Thank you, Honourable Hendricks. Honourable Jito.
Thanks, Chairperson. Chair, I also noted the presentation that was done by Adam. But for now, I'll reserve anything. And I also support my former colleagues that have spoken. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you, Honourable Molekwe.
Thank you, Chairperson. I think I'm covered. But also, I think we need to give the IEC time to look into issues raised and weigh option out of issues that are raised. And it will give the IEC time to advise the PEC accordingly after weighing option regarding the issues that are raised. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you. Honorable Kanyil.
Thank you, Chairperson. Good morning, colleagues. Thank you so much, Adam, for preparing this presentation for us. Chairperson, I wish to indicate that I was largely covered by Honorable Roos and Honorable Lizelle van der Waart. Chairperson, I think what needs to happen, we need to give IEC time to consider the submissions that have been made today. And with regard to the introduction of a different voting method, I do think that going forward, maybe it is the method that we are going to have to look at, considering the new normal that we are living under. We are currently faced with the pandemic, and as it stands right now, the numbers are increasing again. While we are preparing for the 2021 local government elections. The questions that I have for IEC, I remember in the last presentation, they indicated that they do not have a budget for the e-voting system because it is too costly to get the software and whatnot. But the question that I have for them is that, do they think it is something that they can actually be able to look at before the 2021 election? Should they need arise? Should we have more positive cases? Because should that be the case, I think it is something that we'll need to venture into. As an official opposition party in the country, I think you are aware that last month we've had a Congress virtually. It was very successful. So I do believe that this is something that can actually work for us. I think that is my submission for now, Chairperson. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Veteran Likwata?
Am I audible?
That is correct.
Yeah. Thank you very much, Chair. I entered this meeting when it had already started, and I found that in the presentation there were many alternatives presented by various voices and so on. I couldn't really make sense of this. I hope that there can be clarity as to when we are expected to take a decision on what we really want or what we support or what we will take to Parliament. I have benefited a lot from the opinions that the colleagues who have spoken have said, but I would like to have more guidance before I venture an opinion on matters. Otherwise, thank you for the opportunity, sir.
Thank you very much, Honorable Mwela.
Thank you, Minister, Four Sisters. Chair, greetings, colleagues, honourable members. Let's appreciate what Adams has just presented to us. It was not an easy job, of course, in consolidating all what we've just consolidated. Mr. Adams, we appreciate it. I think, Chair, I'm in agreement with colleagues. It's just that there's one slide that I'm missing. I've tried to print some of the slides here, the report presented by Adams, but the one that was presented at the end of his presentation, I don't have it, where it shows figures, because I wanted to entertain some of the figures there. Because I know there's three something that is not in agreement, and the other one is in agreement, and so on. So I wanted to entertain that, but I could not capture very well on the issues of the last part, Mr. Adams, the slides where you were showing figures and so on. But generally, Honorable Chair, I think we're coming okay. So after, let's consolidate what we have and then move forward. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. Honorable Chavani.
No, thanks, Chair, and good morning to members and colleagues in attendance. Chair, I think some of the issues were raised and covered by colleagues. I only have four issues to contribute. One is that, Chair, I think I agree with your collective opening remark to ascertain that we receive public comments noting that there are two methods of receiving this interaction from our people, either in public comments and public hearing. And I think it's what we must appreciate from our the community to interact with this matter. Chair, if you look in terms of the areas which is more of concern, is around the cost of the state, electronic voting, and perhaps the method that has been raised there. I'm sure moving from a point of weakness, but assuming that I'm understanding the submission of the by the IEC that they are not exerting electronic voting as a clause that is going to be effective on the next day election. That's my understanding, Chair. And I think that my understanding that they are saying that this electronic voting, they will pilot it when resources are available. and if resources are available, they will be able to pilot. Because if IEC they don't have resources, Chair, and we want to enter into an electronic voting, as Honorable Kanyile is saying, that in future we'll be bound to move towards this system. And I think it's one of the areas that I think, Chair, we must note. My submission, Chair, is that we may not need to completely delete that provision. We may need to touch the IEC to go and refine to less detail because it may have confusion around the council that when funds are available, they can have able to have a foundation to can conduct a piloting on this to test this this system as and when funds are available. Because there's a consensus that in future, as innovation will able to go to the process of electronic voting. I think that's my view, Chair. You will note that there was an article which was recently raised by one paper that nearly caused confusion and affirmed that they were moving towards electronic voting. We can't move to electronic voting when members of our society in rural areas that are not being taken into process on this matter. It will take a long way to get into this issue. So is that the Chair, the IEC many to mobile. And once Chairperson, if you check the percentages that Adams has indicated, the high percentage there in terms of rejection centered around this electronic voting and cost of this. And once we are able to deal with the refining and less detail and specific, we are able to move forward. The issue of consultation, obviously, if we, as the co-chair indicates, that we may not have a visual and invite members to have an interacting with us, is another method that we may consider, but it necessitated because of this confusion that is being has arise on that area. So those are the comments, Chair, and that we may need to look on the IEC to less refine the detail and not delete completely the provision. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. And then thank you, members. I think, as I've said in the opening, was that we are interacting with what the public has brought before us at this stage, which Rua says is the four stage process. We're at stage three. What is going to happen next week? But we have invited the IEC to be here because they too must retreat. They must retreat and look at what we are raising and look at what the public has raised. Because this process is also part of public participation. So the IEC is going to come next week to respond to all the issues that we have raised, to respond to the issues. But like I've said, like everyone of you says, that this item 14 around electronic voting, I want us to have consensus. I don't want us to run using the kowtowing process of decision making. You know, the technique of decision making is consultation. So that's why I have an interest of at least also talking to members one by one so that we understand this 14 at what stage, because what we're about to take a decision on must be and should be in the interest of the entire general public, considering the fourth industrial revolution at the same time and considering all what other members have said, including what Honorable Kanyile said. But from where I'm sitting, and I want to persuade members that maybe when the IEC comes, they must refine that thing of Section 14, because from what we read from the public, it's like it's an area of concern. People are raising issues, corruption, and all this and that. And our state of readiness. We may need to be presented about maybe a pilot process of dealing with the matter, or a progressive way of introducing, because at the end, whether it's 2024 or in the outer years, we're not going to avoid this kind of voting, but we've got to prepare it and have a solid foundation that is legislative in nature, so that we're able to progressively go towards it. But for 2021 elections, I think we may need to entirely suspend that specific process, but have a process that we are being introduced to in the form of piloting this kind of a voting method. But I want us to have a sufficient consensus, members. I don't want us to vote over these kind of issues because of their nature. And so I want sufficient consensus. But because we're dealing with the IEC next week, we will raise this matter. Let's think about it. And the issue, whether or not you'll be called the people who have raised the objections and so on, it will appear to me again the objections are technical in nature. So once the objections are technical, I'm strongly of the view that we may be able to deal with them if we sufficiently deal with this matter. But if you don't, from the next week meeting, we'll then take a decision, solid decision, because we will be interacting with the IEC clause per clause, objection per objection, and they will be responding. Maybe out of that response of the IEC, we can be able to develop a way forward that says it is sufficient, or we may need to call other hearings, or they will also engage with us about this clause 14 very extensively. They will be engaging with them extensively. Maybe it is then that we can take a decision whether we need to take the process to the fourth stage or not. But I really appreciate your valuable contribution around this matter. I think we're much more wiser now. Like Honorable Likota says, this interaction has made even him more wise, even myself. I'm much more wise in terms of how to navigate and prosecute this matter to its logical conclusion. And now that at least the IEC is with us, they will process the matter, and even ourselves, we must process the matter. I hear Honorable Tito wants to reserve a contribution either to a study group or what, but we're engaging with IEC next week. So let's have solid and solid views and solid engagements next week. But if needs be, we'll have to vote over some of these issues. But I'm just requesting members to apply their minds on all the issues we've discussed today for next week meeting, so that we take decisions after the IEC has responded to all these issues. If there's no one who wants to raise any other matter at this point, I'm going to give to Adams to do a quick summary, after which we'll be doing the last item of the meeting. Adams?
Thank you, Chairperson. I also just noticed a hand raised by Ms. Janet Love from the Commission. There was only one response I needed to give, and that was in relation to the document that Honourable Ella referred to that I presented on, which was a summary from Dear South Africa. We'll forward that to members to have a look at. We can also forward them all the submissions individually if they wish to see them. We'll just send an email out with the submissions and that summary so that members can have direct access to the submissions if they wish. That's all I wanted to say. Thank you.
No, thank you very much, Adams. Let's get all the documents to members. Let's do a further research on these issues, because when the IEC is here for response, we need to have research, whatever decision we need to take. And with that, and members, I think, unless any other member wants to raise anything, we'll be compelled to adjourn this meeting until next week. Can I from my system, I don't see any other hand.
Siyabonga, Chair.
Thank you, Chair.
Thank you very much. The meeting is adjourned.
Thank you, many four sisters.
Thank you, colleague.
Bye. Thank you.
Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Chairperson.
Thank you.